Well, mothering, as we have already said and talked about, mothering isn't a unique role. Most of us have had a mother, and just about all of us have been mothered, nurtured, raised up, been taught by kisses or scolding the way to make it in the world. There's an old proverb that says, an ounce of mother is worth a pound of clergy. So that tells me, especially today, where the wisdom lies. We make fun of the racks of sentimental cards, but they can only guess our story. They're just trying their best. Mother's Day is as complex as our mothers and mothering. I recall one pregnant, emotional Mother's Day at a church far from here. I sat waiting in the sanctuary out in the congregation in a kind of hormone-filled panic for my turn to share personal memories as I listened to an older gentleman angrily recounting his own pain-filled story of an unresolved relationship. Even without the mothering gift of oxytocin or prolactin, this day can still arouse feelings that stay neatly under wraps at other times. We're fortunate if we have a story to tell that leaves our heart warm and that the tears are tears of gratitude and love. It's not always the case. I grew up with a grandmother. Someone mentioned that. I don't remember who it was today. Someone said, grandmothers. I had a grandmother that was an important part of my life. As I came of age, I discovered her own daughter's unresolved grief over their abandonment. She left two tiny children when she moved 4 hours away to the city. My mother and my aunt were stranded with a father who was ill-equipped to care for them. They were sent to foster families until he married a few years later. His new wife, at age 18, was immediately tossed into mothering. I heard difficult stories of those long ago childhood days. Old photos showed summertime picnic visits from the girl's mother. Later, she remarried and then came to them asking, would you girls like to come live with us? So moving from a northern rural back country area, my mother and aunt's teenage years were spent in a lovely cottage-like house set on a lake in an upscale suburb. Resentments became then buried deep, and gratitude for a new life blossomed. Those early years were not talked about in that house. They were not discussed or healed, or the needs for leaving were not unpacked. I can imagine reasons for my grandmother's leaving, but she never shared them with her daughters. At my grandmother's bedside on her last day at age 93, I was powerfully aware of the beauty of redemption. Her grandmothering gave to me what she had been unable to give earlier. Her own story still withheld. She'd been good to my sister and to me. She knew how to take us on outings, shopping for clothing. She knew how to celebrate it with fudge-covered ice cream puffs and make us a front yard lakeside picnic, a cozy bed, or cocoa after sledding on a frozen lake. She demonstrated her creativity through the way that she nurtured flowers into beautiful blooms and arrangements. And she told us that she loved us. There are many kinds of mothering, and some kinds are able to shine later on in life. There are all kinds of mothers, and they don't always come in the ways that we've been led to believe they should. There are long-taught cultural messages that our mothers ought to be biological, or that they wear an apron, or that they always made wise choices when they were young, or that mental illness or addiction shouldn't touch mothers except on television sitcoms. Frequently, unhealthy religious lessons purport that mothers come only in opposite sex couples or in happy, intact two-parent families, or that good mothers' children are always neat and tidy and well-behaved. Messages for mothering instruct that they, as mothers, be well off and still manage to be stay at home and work full time, but always be well rested and have enough time to go to the gym and cook a gourmet organic dinner. But most of us who have mothers know that there are all kinds of mothers, all kinds of mamas, and that some are those that birthed us, and some are those that raised us, and some are those that come into our lives at different times and places to give us nurture or comfort or to build our self-esteem. Sometimes they come in a different gender, and sometimes their gender shifts. And some of us need to know some old messages are wrong. And sometimes it's our task to search our hearts for forgiveness, for those flaws of the world that come through societal lessons or sometimes exist in human form. We can forgive our mothers. We can forgive ourselves, either as children or in our parenting. The richness of healthy faith is bestowed upon us in granting all of the variances that make us whole. The beauty, then, is a mosaic, a tapestry, a flower communion, if you will, of motherhood. Today we will witness to some of these stories. They are all the beautiful truth.
It's dark. Although I don't know why I'm surprised. Hi, Amy. Thanks, you guys. Okay, hi. I heard an interview this morning on NPR with the Christian pop singer Amy Grant, and at the end of it, she was singing one of her newer songs about motherhood and had a quote in it along the lines of, "Another Monday comes, and it's going to be a long week for someone eager to please." When I was asked to speak today, it was nearly impossible to settle down with one story to tell you all that sort of encapsulates what it means to me to be a mother. Come here. Okay. My identity of mother is more multifaceted than I ever imagined it could be. And to truly tell you my story of motherhood, it would just take hours. So I'm just going to offer you some snapshots instead, divided up into what I call the good, the mundane, and the scary. The good are all the hugs and love, the warmth, the tickles, the jokes, the discovery and being part of my children's discoveries, the learning, being part of their learning and what it teaches me, being around for all their firsts and experiencing everything for the first time again, even though I'm 40 years old, which is absolutely amazing. The mundane. The mundane is what I refer to as the reality, the everyday of parenting, the drudgery of meal planning. I'll add to Katie's take on meals as, you know, gourmet, organic, and something that everybody will actually eat. And the reality that my kids eat lots of frozen macaroni and cheese and realizing I just don't care. Also included in the mundane is the bone-crushing exhaustion, all of the laundry that never gets done or put away before it needs to be done again, keeping everyone on schedule, getting homework done, getting people's hair cut, which doesn't always happen, making sure people get dentist appointments, doctor's appointments, never having a moment to myself. Oh my God, the whining, the fighting, my personal nemesis, bath time, and the struggle to cling to time for my own health and well-being. You want down? You want to get down?
Mommy.
Go see Daddy? Okay, there you go. Go find Daddy, okay? And I'll add to that mundane also, the mess, the constant mess, and the destruction that claims the house. The scary is what never quite goes away. And the snapshots for me of scary are the fear while I was pregnant that I would never know how to love or take care of a child properly. The terror of delivering an 11-pound baby. Insecurity everywhere you turn. Sorry. The survivor guilt that comes from being a parent to two healthy, amazing children when so many other people I know are still struggling with infertility and miscarriage. The failure you feel when you find yourself incapable of breastfeeding, the judgment you receive, the deep sadness when your children are sick or insecure. Scary on a different level is the knowledge, the scientific knowledge that was recently released in a study that cells, fetal cells, from all my children can be found in my brain. They never go away. More realistically scary is the fact that life-threatening illness and hospitalization could and would occur. The terror that comes with that experience, the freezing panic when your eight-day-old infant stops breathing in your hands, the paramedics arriving, the blur of the ER, spinal tap, brain scans, IV inserted in the tiniest of arms, soul-crushing sadness that comes with the miscarriage and the infertility, the emptiness of negative pregnancy tests, PTSD relating back to your infertility and miscarriage finally ebbing now that your youngest is almost two, the anxiety that hits when the 3 a.m. wake up happens, you stumble to the baby wondering if you're truly capable of delivering everything that is going to be required of you. To myself and all the other mothers, I say, revel in the goods, especially as they are happening. The goods are powerful and deep. Make time for the mundane, but share them with others so that the burden does not fall squarely on you. Remember that the scaries are going to come whether you want them to come or not. Accept that they are part of the journey. Try not to let those moments define you as a mother. Circle back to the goods. Revel in them again. Revel in watching your big boy do his first amazing cartwheel. Revel in hearing your little one say, I love you for the first time. These are the moments that are going to carry you. And they're hard moments to remember, but the other one, of course, is remember none of us is going to be perfect. Thank you for listening.
Be the mother. And I think that was partly because I'm bossy. And partly because I like to take care of everyone. I remember when I was really small, my mom watched a lot of old movies, and so did I. And one of them was Cheaper by the Dozen. This was put out in 1950. It starred Clifton Webb and Myrna Loy. And, you know, those were the days. Everything was perfect in those days. And this movie was filled with a ton of love and happiness. And the father, who was a pioneering efficiency expert, decided that he was going to impose that on his family. Well, it was such a great movie, I knew then and there. I was going to have 12 children. That's it. Well, you know, things don't always work the way we plan for them to work, and it didn't work in the movie either. So in my teenage years, I developed a reputation as a good babysitter, and I was very much in demand. Of course, I think that was probably due to the fact that
My mother insisted that babysitting duties included cleaning the house and doing the dishes. Well, who wouldn't want to pay a babysitter 35 cents an hour to do that? So I did enjoy it, though. I loved being with the children. In fact, the last 2 years of high school, I worked 40 hours a week babysitting. I had a swing shift babysitting job, and I just loved it, except the kids went to bed too early. As a young adult, I worked as a mother's helper, which is really an underpaid maid. But it got me familiar with a lot of families, and I wound up being able to do some nanny work. So I got to stay with families. Two of them were 8 children each. And I would stay in the house with the children while the parents went on vacation. And if you had 8 children, you'd probably want to go on vacation too. My favorite one was a smaller family, 3 children, and mom was pregnant. So I got called in the middle of the night, and you know, I ran over all ready, and I got to stay there for a month after mom came home, too, so mom could relax. And Sarah, I think you could have used some of that. You should have called me. But it was really great. And I found as I got older, I didn't have as much energy for babysitting. So what I did was we tutored. My husband and I, Roy and I, started tutoring people, and we tutored people from as young as 8 to as old as 30-something. And one of my children, just recently got her bachelor's degree, and we worked for years on that. She was my 30-something. So we really had a good time with that. And with the younger ones, one of the kids we tutored was my nephew, and we helped him with all kinds of homework and all kinds of subjects, and our favorite was science. And what did we do with science? Well, you know, everybody knows the volcano project, right? So we did that, and it was wonderful. We had, all of us had different ideas how we were going to make this thing erupt. So we made it erupt like 10 or 12 times. Our backyard was a complete mess. And I think that there should be a law against grown-ups playing with fake volcanoes. But but we sure had fun. And we both really love children, and we have a lot of energy for them. And I know myself, I always want a kiss from everybody. And I coo, and I fuss, and I carry on. But I love it, and I'm always ready to collect hugs from any age, and that includes all of you out there, because I am a mama.
Good morning, afternoon. So we were very happy when we were asked to get to say a little bit about what it was about being a mom. We have 2 different stories, very contrasting, so I figured I'd go first. I was born to a single parent who was a great mother, and I'm sorry, I'm just kind of choked up because I lost my mom last year, and she was my best friend, and I was an only child because she had many miscarriages, I think about 8 of them, and I'm the only one, so she gave me all the love in the world. You know, out of 9 kids, I'm the only one who, you know, survived, and so I was very loved, and you know, I was forever grateful to her for that. But I grew up, since I was an only child, I didn't have any brothers or sisters, so I had no idea how to change a baby, feed a baby, care for a baby. And I've always been a little bit more tomboyish growing up. And I never really wanted to have any kids. I was like, oh, that looks like it hurts. It doesn't look like fun, you know, and I don't want to ruin my figure, you know, and I don't know if I really want to do that. And my mother, you know, she knew that I, you know, love women and was a lesbian. And she always said, you know, that's fine. She's very accepting, but she always said, I want a granddaughter. You know, she did the mom thing. I'm like, oh, great, you know, like, and I'm thinking, okay, well, number one, if I ever did have a child, I would have no idea how to take care of it. I don't like kids. I don't even want to talk to them. I don't, you know, what would I tell them? What would I do with them? I just never fathomed it. And I never saw myself having children. And then one day I met Xiomara here, who wanted kids, and I used to joke around, yeah, we're going to have five, and we're going to have a Brady Bunch, and da-da-da, and knowing I was totally lying, and like, oh my God. I was like, after the first one, I don't even know what to do, you know, and I remember her, she was being pregnant, and she'll probably touch on the very long, convoluted, very scary road of pregnancy, in which being a physician, and knowing all the things that can go wrong, and knowing that those were going wrong, was scary. And I remember thinking, oh, my goodness, so not only am I freaked out every day that we're going to lose this child, but when it comes out, I'm not even going to be able to relate to it, and she's probably not going to like me. And my mom's ecstatic in the background, like, oh, I'm having a granddaughter, you know, and I'm sitting there going, oh, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. So luckily, Shauki was born fine and great, and she's my best friend, just like my mom was mine. And We actually get along very well. And she's my mini-me, in fact. Even though I didn't physically have her, this child acts and is exactly like me in our mannerisms, down to the way we talk, everything. It's amazing. And now I relate a lot better to children. And I actually take time now when I see a baby to actually be like, oh, it's so cute. Oh, can I hold your child? Which, if you would have told me this when I was a teenager, I'd have been like, yeah, right. I don't even want them things near me. So that's how I've been changed. And every day I try to be the same mom for her that my mom was for me.
Well, as Amanda said, I did always wanted to have just one child. I made that very clear. Just one. She's like, no, we're going to have four. I was like, who's having them? But I come from, you know, I have four siblings. I come from a divorced parents and whatnot. And, you know, as a woman, as a lesbian woman, it was very hard. You know, how am I going to do this? You know, how is this going to play out? How am I going to get pregnant? You know, is that even possible? You know, and I had other feminine complications. You know, I had ovarian cyst syndrome. I, you know, had all kinds of issues. And they always told me that I was not going to be able to carry a child. But yet I was still very hopeful. You know, the way I was brought up in a house of faith. So I had a lot of faith. When we first got pregnant, they told me not to get my hopes up because most likely this child was not going to happen. But yet, I was faithful. I was stubborn. I was determined to have my child that I always wanted. I always wanted a girl. I got my wish. And it was the most scary, most complicated pregnancy that, you know, I was fearful. I lived in fear every day. I bled every day. You know, visits to the hospital, stays in the hospital where they would tell us, like, the most horrid things and in a very blunt way where it made you, like, feel like, don't people have any emotions? And, you know, but like we said, here she is, you know, learning experience. It's the most wonderful gift we could ever have. And, there's challenges, and there's, like somebody else said, tons of joys, and I'm very grateful, and we're very blessed, and she is going to be the only one.